up, sports fans, and welcome back to another episode of Low Expectations, the Gruder Golf Podcast, brought to you by the No Laying Up Podcast Network. Tonight you've got Haley.
Hello.
Kiki.
Good evening.
And me, Jen. And we're extremely excited and humbled to welcome kind of our boss to the program tonight. Many of you probably know who this guy is. Part of my creative process is Googling the guest the day before. And so when you Google Chris Solomon, you actually, the one that we have tonight is the second result, which is pretty good for a Chris. I was surprised to see that. I was expecting maybe a little bit more scrolling, incognito mode too. And there's a little blurb under, people also search, who is Chris Solomon? So a lot of people are out there looking for you, Solly. And it's actually you. And the answer, the little description they have is, Chris is a co-founder of the alternative golf brand No Laying Up and the website nolayingup.com. He's the host of the No Laying Up podcast, which includes a guest list of many PGA Tour players, including Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and many more. So Solly, first of all, welcome. A warm welcome to Low Expectations. How are you doing?
I can't help it. I'm smiling because I've heard this introduction so many times, but I've never actually seen it play out right in front of my eyes here on Squadcast.
It's all live.
Sup, sports fans.
Oh, wait, you have listened to it?
You know what? One of my life's great accomplishments is it used to be, if you Googled Chris Solomon, there's a guy on death row in Texas that was like everyone was trying to save and whatnot. And so for anybody that Googled me, some people thought that I was on death row. And so I think...
What a pleasant surprise.
There's another Chris Solomon in Cincinnati who is now accused of murdering someone. So there's someone else in the search results. So just so you know.
Oof. See, now that you've the first mistake you made is ruling out me as possibly that suspect. So.
Well, I looked at the pictures. It's not you.
So is there anything that you'd add to that description? That would kind of better fill out the picture of who is Chris Solomon. That's what
Loving
we're trying to get
family
to
family man, admired by his peers. I think that pretty much covers it. Yeah, it does crack me up. If you click on a few of those questions on Google, listen, I've Googled myself before. It happens. But obviously, it's funny like what starts circulating too much. Like, where does Icarito come from? Are the Carters really brothers? Why do they say they're brothers? How much is No Laying Up worth? Like, the questions that start auto-generating are really fun on Google if you get going.
Wow, that's pretty sweet. And you actually kind of answered one of our first questions too for you, which is, have you listened to this podcast before?
All the time. I listen to it all the time. It's an absolute delight.
All the time. Well, you know, obviously we're very, very excited to be working together. We missed you guys while you were at the offsite, so we wanted to hear a little bit about how that went, how the week off was for everybody. Or week on? Or do you work? What goes on there?
So much work. My stupid boss makes me be in meetings from 8 a.m. to like 10 p.m. Neil is the stupid boss, I would say, to all of that. He's the organizer of I say that, of course, tongue in cheek. I'll give him a lot of credit. He's the organizer of all the non-fun things that have slowly started to become fun. Like, he was the last one to come in full time with us, and we were kind of just spread all over the place. We didn't have a lot of systems, we didn't have a lot of processes. We were kind of still doing decent stuff, but internally we just were disconnected, and you know, it wasn't very sustainable. And he kind of came in and cleaned up a lot of how that works, and you know, says we need to meet, we need to do this. Like, this is what real companies do. Guys, I hate to tell you this, but we are kind of a real company. We can have a lot of fun, but like, we got to check some boxes on certain things. And those things have turned into big energy risers, I guess, if you will. You come back with like a very clear picture of like, all right, this is what I'm responsible for. This is what we got to get done. This is how I got to communicate to the group. Here's how we're going to attack this year. And it's just good to start the year that way. I mean, things are already like crazy, crazy busy. I just said this to my wife as I was getting ready to record this. It's like, I need like 2 days off. I need to do it. I did not take a day off this month. And I have a drone exam in the morning that I've been cramming for and like been trying to watch all this golf, do all these interviews. And it hits so fast and hard this time of year. And if you're not careful, you can like I said, I've been working pretty much late for every month, every day of the month so far. I know it's February 1st. I meant January, and it's just like, you got to come up for air. And so, you know, it's easy to let stuff like that slip by. Like, oh yeah, we'll eventually meet and plan it out. But like, we all flew to the same location, no phone zone, let's talk about these things in particular. Most of the time, we just talk about you guys. That's pretty much how we pass a lot of the time. So I knew
what's
that's what
next
your next
in
question.
Golf.
I knew that's what your next question was.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Wow. So, I mean, we were actually just saying, too, when we were getting ready for this, you know, that there's so much watching involved in everything you guys do. Like, there's so much, like, I mean, that's your entire, it's 4 days a week. Like every week almost. So when are you taking your 2 days off?
I don't know. So I don't like, I think like Tuesdays and Wednesdays are as close as I get to like being able to take days off, but I got to get my, you know, the No Laying Up interview podcast that goes out on Tuesday nights. Got to be done. You know, if that's going to actually happen, we have DraftKings video that we get published on Tuesdays as well. Usually Tuesdays are not that much of a day off. Wednesday's your best chance at one. I don't watch golf Thursday through Saturday religiously. Like Sunday, I am there from the beginning of the round, especially this time of year. People are into it. People are, you know, especially people that live in kind of cold weather cities and things like that. They're watching golf. They're watching sports. You know, now that the NFL is going to be kind of separated here, it really starts to pick up a notch too. So Sundays, I'm definitely watching. Saturdays, I'm trying to. Thursday, Friday, it's just not sustainable to sit and watch. Like people get on me for complaining so much about commercials, and I'm like, you don't understand how much golf we've been watching here. Like, if you watch as much as we have, you'd be blowing your brains out here. But it's important just to keep an eye on everything that's unfolding, keep an eye on the stories, and be able to talk about it when it comes to the podcast. But it's not a sustainable thing. The older I get, I used to be able to watch a lot more. It's just you can only it's really uncomfortable, and my wife is extremely understanding. My wife's parents extremely understanding, but it's still super weird. When people are like, hey, do you want to come do this on Sunday? And I'm like, I've got to watch golf. Like, that's what my job actually is.
Yeah,
like, meeting
is
people, when you explain that to people, like, yeah, I can't come to your wedding because I have to watch the Masters. Like, that can be pretty hard. Like,
have you
really
turned
can.
Down weddings because of that?
Weddings I didn't want to go to, yes.
Sure, okay,
no.
Okay.
If it's on my names. Wife's side. No, some of my fraternity brothers was, one of my fraternity brothers was during the U.S. Open last year. I missed one for the Solheim Cup last year. Like,
wow.
When you work weekends, you know, listen, I am not going to come on this podcast and complain about my job at all, but there are sacrifices that come with it, and some stuff that lines up on weekends. You got to just like, you got to just sit and hope that, you know, stuff doesn't land. I mean, if my sister's wedding came on the Saturday of the Masters, I think I would skip the Masters probably. But yeah, sometimes you just got to make some tough calls of like, I got to be working this week, and that's just the nature of the job.
Yeah. Completely wow. Fair.
Kind of reminds me of when you opted out of Haley's birthday dinner at the Solheim Cup.
Work calls.
That was
work
a working day.
That was really funny though, because we just walked over your table. We're like, all right, like that'll be the last night. Like, well, they'll definitely say yes. Like, it's Haley's birthday after all. And we go over like,
after
so
all.
It's Haley's birthday tomorrow. We have a little plan. And just very matter of factly, you guys were like, so we record
this
every
small
Sunday,
little podcast you might have heard
every
of.
Single Sunday. Like, oh right, didn't yeah. really think that one through.
yeah, it we got it pretty well streamlined, and like now we have a decent process. At least like, you know, I can eat dinner at home, and then I go over to the Kill House to record the podcast. And Hannah's great about, you know, we at least sit and watch the golf together, so we're at least hanging out on Sundays. So it was really hard. She doesn't currently work a 9-to-5 job, but when she did Monday through Friday, and then the weekend would turn over, and then it'd be my turn to work, like we'd be, you know, two ships passing in the night, which, you know, again, we're looking for sustainability in this job. Like, how are we, like, once we have kids and everything like that, I don't know if I'm going to be, how much golf I'm going to be able to sit and watch. That's down the line. I know that. But, you know, this is a, the longer, later in life we get, it just gets a little bit more challenging to kind of fit everything in one day. So
ain't that the truth?
Yeah. It's a balance. Speaking of watching golf, we want to talk to you about this hot start to the LPGA season. So we have Danielle Kang coming off a win. We have Lydia Ko coming off a win. So our first question for you is, who are you watching this year? Who do you want to see win? Who do you think is going to win?
Yuka. Oh, yeah. I'm all that's aboard the Yuka Sasso
really?
Train. I think it was around April last year, the Lotte Championship, when she made a big run at it. Was like the first time I ever watched her play golf. And like, listen, as I mentioned, I watch a lot of golf. And there's not a lot of golfers that jump off the screen as like, whoa, 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 replay that one. Like, I want to see that swing again. Immediately seeing her golf swing, I started rooting for her. Turns around, wins the U.S. Women's Open less than 2 months after that at the age of 19. I went and followed her at the KPMG Women's PGA in late June as well. Just I'm infatuated with her golf game. I think her personality is people are just starting to get to know it. She was actually out in Hawaii during the Century Tournament of Champions. I think she was out there for Callaway's launch and whatnot. The PGA Tour shot a video of her walking around following Hideki and things like that. And I was smiling the whole time. Like, I'm fascinated to watch. She's, you know, Filipino, now playing under the Japanese flag, speaks Filipino, speaks Japanese, speaks a lot better English than people probably give her credit for. I think she's been kind of reduced down to the one that swings like Rory. And it's like, I feel like there's probably a little bit more there. So I'm excited to watch her rise. That's who I'm most excited about.
Yeah. I want the listeners to know we did not feed you that question ahead of time. That was a genuine, pure answer. And all that emotion and response.
There's no cheat sheet. I got nothing.
No,
I got no. You know, usually when I request the questions in advance. You know, of course, that's exactly how we operate on our podcast as well. We let the guest decide exactly what we're going to ask, I'm sure. Yeah, that was the only way I was going to come on. Only grounds.
You had a very long rider that you sent over. No, love the immediate emphatic response of you go all in. Love it.
Nelly's going to win this week, though, I have a feeling. So I think my rule for this year, at least we do picks every week. I'm going to pick every week where the conditions are not going to be a factor. I'm taking Nelly. If you throw a little bit of conditions in there, candidly, I just don't think she's that tough. Like, she just is, you know, she doesn't handle wind, doesn't handle rain, doesn't handle cold that well. But if it's going to be good weather, Nelly Korda, I mean, number one player in the world, really bold pick. But I think it's a very condition dependent when it comes to her.
Yeah, well, that's a good take, actually. I hadn't thought of that. I haven't looked at the stats on that one, but it sounds plausible.
Well, I also always forget about the conditions because I just...
I'm just always on my couch. Perfect conditions.
Yeah, I'm just walking and just relaxing.
Perfect conditions always.
You know, I see them wearing long sleeves, so I'm sure there's some weather going on, but I just don't really pay attention.
I usually do, and then, like, I've just seen it. I remember flipped it on this past weekend, and the wind was blustering all over the place on Saturday, and I forget which, maybe it was even the week before. She's putting jackets on. Yeah, it was the Sunday of the week before. She's putting a jacket on in between shots. Nah. That's a different breed. Because I'm not tough on the golf course. Like, I need everything. Like, if it's 71 degrees and not 72, like, that's going to cost me two shots at least. Because, like, I just, I am a mental midget when it comes to any kind of conditions or any of that. And I see that in her. So it takes one to know one on that one.
Well, we never got to talk. We haven't had a guest in a couple of weeks. So we didn't get to talk about the Tournament of Champions, which we're kind of fascinated with the celebrity side of that tournament. You know, obviously it's... The LPGA side is great, but did you have any favorite Red Sox players who were on that celebrity side, or was it Alfonso Ribeiro for you, or who are your kind of favorites? And do you have any insight actually into who picks the celebrities? Like, who does the invites here?
That's a great question. So it's amazing kind of how the golf industry works. Like, all you need involved in anything is like one person that is willing to ride for you, which we've been on the beneficiary of like certain companies that are like, hey, you know, they have one guy that like maybe had heard about us and is like, hey, you know, I'm going to ride for these guys right now. And like you, and before you know it, you end up with a BMW contract. Like, it comes, if we didn't know this one particular guy at BMW, we would have never met anyone there. That's just like crazy how it works. So whoever is deciding it, you can just like scroll down and be like, oh, I used to like watch Marty Fish play tennis. Let's call him. Let's get him involved or something like that. But my favorite tradition of any kind of celebrity or amateur thing is the handicap auditing that goes on. So I love this about golf. Everyone is almost always very modest about like their game. Everyone loves to make jokes about how bad they suck and all this, whatnot. Yet only on Twitter or on YouTube or on social media of some kind do all of a sudden, if someone says that they are this handicap, you immediately forget how hard golf actually is and automatically assume that person is either a vanity handicap or a sandbagger in some way. Like, you know, Derek Lowe was a plus two or something, or Marty Fish was a plus two and he was eight over par. Tom Abbott had a tweet about it and everyone's like, oh, see, he's not a plus two. And I'm like, no, like that is exactly what a plus two would shoot in conditions that look like that. Compare that right against the LPGA players they're playing against. The pros are beating them by five, six shots every round. Like, that is exactly it. People do not understand that, you know, the handicap measurement is a measure of your potential, not of your consistency. I'm a scratch player. I shoot 82 all the freaking time. Every time I do, I can shoot 72 and have one bad shot in it, and everyone see like, yeah, he's not scratch. He's that's fake. Like, that's totally fake. It's like, no, dude. Like, that, very clearly, bad shots get mixed in with this, and I kind of like the celebrity tournaments because there is at least that something next to the pros to make you appreciate it, right? And I forget who they interviewed. Yeah. One of the guys from The Bachelor or Bachelorette or something. He was a great interview, and he was just like, people, like, I have immediately checked out of the round today. I have no toughness. Like, these pros' ability to get through four rounds, like, honestly, 72 holes walking is exhausting to me. This is a super underrated thing. I needed to see that up close. It's like, that's some really good insight. If they played more of that angle of, like, all right, you guys are playing alongside these women, like, tell me about what impresses you. Because that's the thing, is I've come back from playing with Danielle Kang or Angel Yin or something like that, and I'm just like, guys, I wish I had, like, a better take than this, but they're just, like, so good at golf. Like, they're just – I wish I had a better way of saying it. They're in total control of their golf ball. I can hit it 50 yards past Danielle Kang, and I can't beat her, like, not even close. So, like, what does that tell me? Like, you got to get better at approach. You got to get better at chipping. You got to get better at putting. You got to be in better control of your golf ball. And you go watch a PGA Tour event. Like, I don't walk away from that being like, oh, that looks super simple, because these guys are just, like – torque and power and bass and all this stuff that they're doing just looks not humanly possible. Yet, you know, you can go follow HJ Kim around for nine holes and be like, okay, it's not like that hard. Like, it's pretty simple. You know, she's just got it in this position to there, and it just goes straight. Like, let's go play golf. I want to go play golf. And that's how I always feel walking away from that. What was your question originally? I don't even know. I got going.
That was really good, actually.
That was really good.
No, we were talking about the celebrities, but hearing you talk about the LPGA, you know, actually brings us to our next question, because you guys, and we sort of are going to predict the answer anyway, and based on what you just said, but No Laying Up has really expanded its coverage and we would say investment in the women's game, I think, in the last couple of years, which has not gone unnoticed. It was honestly like one of the main reasons why the three of us got super into the game early on following the LPGA. And we just wanted you to kind of make a comment on sort of the reasoning behind that and what you see as the trajectory over the next couple of years of the game and why.
Just checking a box, just wokeism, you know, it's just, you know, it's just,
you know, cancel culture. Being
a woke mom.
Cancel culture was coming after us. You know, it's funny. I didn't have an LPGA presence in my life at an impressionable age. I grew up in Dublin, Ohio. Went to the Memorial Tournament every year. There was an event that was played at like a Wendy's 3M Challenge that was played in my hometown that just didn't get the, you know, look, as I say it, it's like, well, yeah, like I didn't really understand that LPGA events were not as big of a deal. They were a big deal to me as a kid. I would watch Annika on TV and whatnot, but I didn't have that in-person experience. And you know, we got into golf just through covering the men's side of it. And as we started, like, I'd never been to an LPGA Tour event until February, I think, of 2018. We got invited to go play the Kia Classic Pro-Am. Like, we left after 18, we played nine holes with Tiffany Joe and nine holes with Jane Park.
Ooh, fun.
And had just, like, we were, like, looking around, like, hey, do people, like, not know about this? Like, this is the most possible fun you could have, like, playing golf. They are such good entertainers. And it felt so, I don't know what the right phrase is to say it, but it felt like, you know, you guys are great entertainers. Like, it feels like patting them on the back by saying that. Like, of course they're good entertainers. They're professionals. That's part of it. But it was a level of care that I've not experienced on the men's side. I've played a lot of men's pro-ams, and, like, the guys have been pretty good at, you know, engaging and talking and things like that. But it is a bit of check the box going on. Whereas, like, the women we played with were there to entertain you for nine holes, tell vulgar stories, laugh, joke, like a true entertainment product. And we just walked away like, all right, well, shit, I can't wait to star Jane Park and Tiffany Joe's name on the leaderboard and follow them every week. Like, I got two players I'm heavily invested in now, and just started watching it a little bit more and more, and going, like, every time we went to an event, it was just kind of like, man, this is unbelievable how you can show up, you can watch and follow any player you want with an up-close view. Like, what other sport can you get an unfeathered access to, like, the best player in the world? And for a total, like, golf nut, like, candidly, I still am not, like, interested in women's basketball. Like, that doesn't get me excited yet.
God, not yet. Follow them on Twitter. And then you're all the way
That's
in.
Not
it's
a
crazy.
Shot, but I'm just saying, like, women's golf is I know I'm not better than WNBA players. I know that, and I know that's a common take. People want to say that, like, oh, why would I go watch basketball that I'm better at? I know that to not be the case, but I'm still so amazed at the golf talent here that, like, I find it super intriguing and engaging. Like when it's blustering and it's 170 yards and the wind's coming in and I see like Daniel Kang pulling out a hybrid, like I get legitimately excited. Like I hit a hybrid, a green with a hybrid one every 30 times probably. And she's probably going to hit this to 15 feet. And I think that's just so interesting. And you can go around and follow that with great access. And I want to see more women, more junior girls get involved in the game. And the LPGA players are so good at signing for everyone. And if you are a mother or a father of a young girl that is looking to get into golf, you are doing them a disservice not taking them to an LPGA event, because it's just a fantastic experience. I really do think so. So any chance we get to go to, like, I have no plans to go to any PGA Tour events outside of the one in Jacksonville, but I'm kind of looking for an excuse to get down to some of these Florida ones or some LPGA events along the way, just because it really is that good of an experience.
Oh my God, fun. Wait, aren't you guys doing the big Queen City, right? Is that a big thing this year?
Yep, doing a big one around Cincinnati this coming year. Yep. And then we'll be at the KPMG Women's PGA. Cody will be at the U.S. Women's Open, I think. LPGA itself is just so helpful when it comes to anything. Like, we were trying to have an LPGA player on before the season started, and it was kind of like, man, they've kind of helped us with Nelly. They've helped us with Jessica. They helped us with Danielle. They've helped us with Lydia. Like, gosh, Stacey Lewis, Pernilla, we kind of had a lot of them on at this point. Like, there's no one that says no. Like, there's no one we can't get. And, you know, we tried to get Lydia right before the season started, and we couldn't track her down, but we got, and I'm sorry to steal Leona McGuire for you guys. That broke my heart.
It's okay. We had her on the line, and then Haley friggin' had to get engaged and give everybody COVID. And then we had to cancel on her. We don't have to get into it, but I think it was.
Well,
everyone got sick because it was December. Because I had DM'd her like a creep. Like, you know, maybe in like November or something. And then she was like, oh, like I just saw this like in December. And it was funny to scroll back up because you could see like every other thing that we had ever tagged her in, which was like so many things. And I was like, obviously she's not going to get back to us on here. Like she's going to go up and be like, these girls are psychotic and no way in hell am I letting them like talk to me at all. And then she's like, oh, sorry, just seeing this. So, yeah, but so we got to her first, but we were busy, so we had to wait.
I listened to it, though. It was awesome. It was a great
She's
great
so cool.
She's great. Yeah, it was so funny. Really, really cool. At the Solheim Cup, we got, you know, we're pretty tight, and we're one of the groups that sponsored Madeline Sagstrom. We know her and her caddy really well, and I've done a video project with her, and they got us into the party afterwards. It was kind of like it was not our invite to pass out.
We don't want to hear about this.
This is for the listeners, not
this
for
is
you
salt
guys.
To the wound.
Just rubbing it in.
It was not our invite to be able to pass out. We weren't even supposed to be there. We got some weird looks, but it was awesome watching like the celebration unfold and like the very outgoing people on their team that were singing "We Are the Champions" and you know, drinking out of the Solheim Cup and dancing and whatnot. And like the people that were like slowly got to get to come out of their shell a little bit slowly. Charlie Hull was a little slow. Georgia Hall was slow. And Leona McGuire was just slow to come out. And then eventually, this won't translate that well to the audio people listening on audio, but eventually she just started doing this like little dance, just this little kind of shimmy back and forth while having a conversation, but never stopped doing it the whole time. And it was like, Leona, it came out of her shell. Like, I love it. This is fun.
That's amazing.
For some reason, I can picture that perfectly. That's great.
That's so cute. That's really cute.
That's amazing. I'm surprised that Charlie Hull would be slow to come out of the shell.
She was on her phone the whole time. Yeah, she was.
Not surprised about that.
Yeah, she was.
Love that intel, though.
That song was stuck in my head for like 3 weeks. I'm serious. I think they played it 18 times in a row as they just passed around the Solheim Cup. And I was like, shit, bring it over here. I'll have a drink. Come here, bring it. It was like champagne beer mix. It was horrible, but it was a memory.
Yeah.
I feel like focusing on the We Are the Champion song is such like a distinctly European thing to do. You know, like I was just last week in Europe, not to brag, but like I was. And just all the time, like all the music is like 80s or 90s or just like old. You know, like that's what's cranking everywhere all the time.
Where were you in Europe?
I went skiing in Austria, which was sweet. And then we got delayed because there was snow back here in Boston. So we were in Zurich for what seemed like a week, but it was one night where I just stayed up for 20 hours straight. So I saw a lot of it. Saw a lot of Zurich, which was really cool. Really cool. But yeah, wouldn't have been surprised if we heard We Are the Champions during that during that jaunt, you know.
It might have been just like, it might have been Mel going around Europe and playing it on every
maybe
every you know, Spotify she could find.
Well, wait, you actually lived in Europe for a while. We had scrapped this question, but now that it came up, you know, because I brought it up.
I never bring it up. I never tell people about that time that I lived for Europe in 33 months. So I'm really, really shy. I don't like to talk about it. You know, I don't even know what to say about it. It's a very private time in my life.
Very, very private. Yeah, not really a lot of coverage on it already. But wait, where were you? And tell the listeners. I think it's cool.
So
I do think it's cool.
Back in like going way back, I'll try to make this quick. I was in a pretty serious relationship as of like 2013 or so that ended quite poorly, if I may say. That's all I'll say about that.
Damn it.
But as we rolled into 2014, that's when kind of No Laying Up was kind of starting to pick up a little bit. I kind of just needed something to do with my time, a little creative outlet, and I kind of buried myself in that for a little while. And I used to work for KPMG. I used to work in audit, so financial services. My clients were large broker dealers, and one of my clients was a very large Dutch broker dealer. And so every year after we finished our audit, the partner from Amsterdam would come to our office and review our files. And basically, he just wanted some wine and some Chicago steaks and visit some steakhouses and things like that. It's pretty informal, but he comes in and he, you know, it happens to be Masters week. It's Masters Thursday, and I need to get back home. I need to watch it. I want to, you know, send out some bad tweets about it, all that stuff. And like about 4:30, he dumps like this pile of notes on my desk of like all the questions he has about the file. And this is a true story, by the way. And he says it to me kind of joking, kind of cocky, like, oh, this will probably keep you here all night with all these. And I went to work on them, and I cleared every one of them, gave him an answer to all of them before he left at 5 o'clock because I wanted to get home and watch the Masters that badly. It was basically just like, nope, that's wrong. Nope, boom, 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 threw it to him. And he was like, oh, wow, I guess you know your file pretty well. We could really use someone at your level in Amsterdam. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll see you tomorrow. Boom, gone, bye. And I was out the door. And, you know, we talked some the next day, and he went back, and, you know, people say things like that all the time. And he called me the next week. He was like, I was serious about what I said. If you're interested, I could use you on the team starting this fall in Amsterdam. I had never been to Europe before. I'd never been out of North America before. I was 27 years old. Had lived in Chicago for about 6 years and just decided to go for it. I sold everything I had, packed everything into 4 suitcases and booked a one-way flight to Amsterdam and, you know, just moved to a foreign country and started within 3 months of being, it was supposed to be an 18-month secondment. Within 3 months of being there, I had extended an extra 15 months because I loved it, fell in love with it. It was the best time in my life. It was like grown up foreign college, like for an adult, you know, you're not as broke as you were in college. So you can afford like, you know, $40 Airbnbs instead of like the $8 hostels, like not to flex, but it was like, probably every other weekend, maybe, you know, maybe 30 out of 52 weekends a year. I know you made a lot of friends pretty easily, pretty quickly. There's a lot of Americans over there that are doing the exact same thing. Like you go and you just jump a flight to a foreign country for the weekend. Like, hey, you know, we're going to Barcelona this weekend. Do you want to go? Boom. 120 euro round trip flight booked. You can leave work on a Friday afternoon, have dinner in Barcelona at midnight, jump the 7 p.m. flight back, be home in time to watch the golf on Sunday night, and back to work on Monday morning. I didn't sleep like 3 years. Like it was.
Doesn't sound like it.
I lived above a bar. It was like Cheers.
Whoa.
It was incredible.
Wow.
Like, I didn't go to it for like the first 3 months, and then I met someone that lived in the neighborhood, and they were like, you know, the people in there are like, hey, why does the guy in the beard never come down to the bar? And like, sure enough, by the end of it, I couldn't walk home from the bars and not like get drug in and be there until like 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's just Amsterdam is an incredible city for anyone that's never been. Like, I knew about the bike culture. Everyone's like, oh, you bike everywhere. You bike. I didn't know that, like, if you go out for the night, you're on a bike. Like, you go to the bar and go drink, like, a lot, you're on your bike. And no one really cares if you are biking drunk. Like, bikers rule the city. If you drive drunk in there, you will get deported out of that country. Like, you don't take the cars inside the city limits if you've been drinking. Or, you know, they don't mess around with any of that. But it's just this whole culture of like biking around from place to place and regardless of the weather. And it was the most fun. It just gets you out of the house. Like the houses are not big there, but it just gets you out and you're riding around this town that just looks like, it looks fictional. It looks like a Disney, you know, you're inside of a Disney globe of some kind. And I had just the time of my life. It was so much fun. I encourage anyone that has ever had a chance to go study abroad or work abroad or live abroad just to go do it. I think I went to 45 countries in 3 years and just I mean, we just started like testing the limits of where we could go. We went to Nigeria. We went to Ukraine. We went to, we actually, and the last trip we took was to a place called Svalbard. It is the northernmost settlement in the world. Like if you pulled up a map right now, you you would struggle to find it. Like when you're there, you're one of the only, you're one of the most northerly 1,000 people in the world. Like 75% of the island has syphilis. Like they have like on-demand, on-demand condom delivery out there. Like
it's a weird. Coming out here.
That was a curveball.
Yeah, so, that was.
Wait, wait. Why does living that far north give you syphilis?
It's like a, I don't know what happened.
Nothing else
like,
to do.
It's like a university town. Like there's a bunch of scientists that live up there and whatnot. And like we went on this. Like so, the sun doesn't
bang it up there.
The sun. They do. The sun. The sun does not set up there for like 4 months. So like we went on like this midnight hike with this.
Oh my God.
You have to have a guide hike you, with you because there's polar bears and shit up there. So. You go up to like the top of this mountain and this guy's like telling us all about the town. He's like, that's where it was an old Russian mining town or something. And like, yeah, that's where the miners lived and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, that's the bar down there. You know, if you, but if you find a girl from there, you need to visit that clinic in the morning because that's where you need to get tested. And all that.
We were just like, oh my God.
But like, it's hard to describe, like picture the brightest that it ever was today. You know, the brightest moment of the day. It's like that at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Like it's totally insane. They, like for we were north of the Arctic Circle for 10 days. Never, I mean, the sun never set. It was.
How did you go to sleep? Could you sleep?
It's super hard to get to sleep, and then it's really hard to wake up. So like you probably like don't fall asleep. Like we would go to the bar and like come out at like 1:30 in the morning and just walk out, and it's just it's like it's noon. Like it's insane. I'll send you guys after I'm done a video. We climbed the mountain. We slid down the mountain at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and you would guess it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was insane, but. Like the proximity in Europe, like it's just so easy to get to a whole new culture in like an hour. It's unbelievable. And the flights cost like 40% of what they cost in the U.S. And eventually we reached out. We started going to like Morocco. We went to Egypt. We went to Romania. We went to Namibia and South Africa. Like the whole goal was like go everywhere you're not going to go once you're back stateside. It wasn't like a lot of time in Paris and Rome and things like that. It was like, dude, go places that you're never ever going to go the rest of your life. And I'm quite happy with my life, of course, but there are definitely times when I miss just like, oh yeah, you want to go to, I don't know, God, you want to go to Copenhagen this weekend? Sure, let's go. Do you want to go to Northern Ireland and play golf? Yeah, I'll work a half day in the morning and then we'll tee off at Royal County down in the afternoon. Like that's the proximity of some of these places. It's just, it's insanity.
Well, I wanted to ask about that. I mean, how much golf did you play while over there? And what were some of the crazier places that you played?
I'm an idiot. I didn't play that much golf over there. Like I honestly went to go do that though, because I was playing too much golf in the US and I was like, I needed to do something a little more fulfilling. I needed to go do some things that were, you know, challenging me in a lot of ways. I wouldn't call myself a World War II buff, but like I'm into learning about it, and I visited a lot of places like that, a lot of historical sites that I just, you know, I wanted to see at some point in my life. And then near the end is when Noling Up really started kind of taking off, and I didn't really know this about like the golf world in general, but you could email a golf course and be like, hey, we have some followers on social media, can we come play? And they'd be like, yes, anytime you want, come on out. And I'd be like, oh my God, that was like €100 tee time for free. And on the back end, I would spend like 15 hours writing it up. And then I was like dividing up the cost. I was like, okay, yeah, they're getting a fine. They're getting a good deal out of this. But understanding that, like, you know, some different ways that maybe we could present our content or do content. We could cover golf courses. We could travel a little bit. We could take drone photos. We could maybe, I didn't know how to do video or anything like that. But it was just like starting to explore that part of the golf world was it reinvigorated my love for golf. I'm not saying I was falling out of love with it, but I never had access to play, you know, great, great golf courses growing up. And all of a sudden, like a like 50 of the top 100 of the courses in the world. I'm pulling that number out of my ass, but 50 of the top 100 are somewhere in the UK or Ireland. And it was like, oh my gosh, I could play like five of these over the course of like 4 days if I wanted to. And that like got me back into golf. It was Lynx golf is a totally different style of play. There's Mike Kaiser said there's Lynx golf and there's everything else. Like it's so true. It's a totally different style. The lifestyle around it's so much more fun. Had a great time meeting people from that part of the world and squeezing a little bit of golf in Holland, but not very much. I say I played maybe 12 rounds a year, probably including travel and whatnot. But gosh, that part of the world just has unbelievable golf that if I were to do it again, it would involve a lot more golf now, that's for sure. But I ended my whole trip back before coming back home, quit my job to come back and do no laying up full time. But I spent 40 days starting in Scotland and I followed the European tour around their British leg and spent like 37 days I spent in a rental car driving around, played 38 rounds of golf and covered pro golf along the way. And that was the true last hurrah. That was the senior year spring break trip, if you will, of like life gets real after this trip. But I'm not going to think about that until August 1 when I'm back home, because I was staying with Scottish, you know, single Scottish moms with their like 10-year-old kids. Like, I would rent the couch in there for $25.
I was gonna say, like, wait, how do you know so many single Scottish moms? Where did you
find
these?
Hot singles in your area popped up. But no, like a single mom's like looking for some extra income, rents out like her couch or like a futon or something. I was paying £12 or something.
I like forgot about the internet of it all. Yeah. And I was just like, how'd you track these people down?
Did you use Couchsurfer? I remember Couchsurfer was a thing where you could literally rent couches. And that was like the Airbnb, but like strictly for couches.
I only did Airbnb because I think Couchsurfer, you're also supposed to be like, it's kind of like a give and take situation. Like,
you're supposed to have a couch also?
I think so, yeah. I did not have I didn't own much of anything at this point in my life. It was just like I don't know how to describe that time period other than like, I call it like the say yes time period, like the Jim Carrey movie almost of like, if somebody said something like, you want to go do this? Like my answer in all likelihood was yes. Like I'll figure out a reason, you know, to say no, or a good reason to say no rather than the opposite way around it. And it was so much fun. I was very aware of at the time, like how ridiculous my life was, and people probably wanted to punch me on Instagram because I was just, you know, just way oversharing, I'm sure. But it was so ridiculous to me that I could be, you know, I remember at one point being like in Berlin at the airport on the runway at like 7 o'clock and then like on my couch by 9 p.m. And it was just like, and it just like, that's how fast you can get around. And that was just an awesome way to live.
That's so crazy. That's so like funny. Prior to going to Europe, like, had you ever like, had you always been like a yes guy, or was it like just that point in your life? Cause like,
I'd say I was pretty risk averse to that point, and kind of, I was in the rat race pretty good. Get out of college, you know, go straight to work and, you know, at KPMG. I was there for 6 years to that point before I went and did that. And I liked it. I mean, I liked my life in Chicago. I wasn't like in a hurry to leave, but at a certain point, I felt like I was like, that was a phase of my life where it was like, put in your time, put in your time, put in your time. And eventually it was like, man, these are like probably the healthiest years of my life. Like, probably should go do some things as well. And a lot of my friends were starting to get married, starting to have kids, and like that just wasn't in the cards for me at that time. And it was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go take like the biggest risk I've ever taken. I say this, like, I've taken two big risks in my life, I would say. One was going abroad, and two was like quitting my job to do no laying up full time. And it's like, all right, I don't know if I'm going to take a third, because I think I got like two really good.
You got very lucky with those two.
Those two went really, really well. But it also is like, you know, I've read enough books that were about taking your life in your own hands and things like that. And I still like don't want to give my dad credit for this, but I don't think he'll listen to this. But he always told me, he's like, son, you can do whatever you want in life. He always said that. And I was like, no, dad, like, you don't get it. Like, I got to go get the job. I got to do it. Like, no, you can go. You can do whatever you want truly in life. And I was like, no, I need to do this, 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 and this. And then like around 27, 28, I was like, ah, God, he was right. He was right. I needed to learn it on my own though, but he was exactly right. But that's what I tell people, is like, you just, you know, It's not necessarily moving abroad, but honestly, like, if you get a chance to go live in a different culture, it changed my worldviews on pretty much everything. It changed, like, the world truly doesn't revolve around the United States. I do hate to report that, but like, as of 2013, I thought it did. But then you go over there and like, it's just, it's very different. Everything is very different. It's all the way down to like, when I got over there, my first day at work, people kept coming up to my desk and asking me if I wanted something to drink. And I was like, this is kind of weird. Like, they're really just like sucking up to the new guy. Like, no, I'm good. I'm good. And then I would get up like 30 seconds later and go get my own drink. And later learned they probably thought I was a huge asshole, because Dutch culture is if you get up to get yourself a drink, you ask everyone around you if they want a drink. And for those listening in the car, like, everyone's jaws are dropping right now. I was like, that's a super weird tradition, right? That's weird, right? It's only weird to us. Like, that's very normal to them. Like, that is how they have always done things. And so, you know, people come up constantly throughout the day. I end up drinking like 6 espressos a day because everyone's always asking me if I want one. But then, like, every time I learned that I need to participate in that, I need to go ask people. And that's a way to meet people. So you work in a big office, like, you sit in a different place every day. You need to meet the people around you and things like that. I actually learned to do all that in Dutch, which was really difficult, but a fun challenge. But all these things that are kind of like, okay, that's weird. Like, I would say that's weird, yet to them is totally normal. And then you realize, like, oh, like, our cultural things all the way down to how we get drinks is just what we know. That's not like what the world knows. That's not how the world acts and any of that. Like, learning, like, peeling that Band-Aid off was kind of like, oh, okay. Now I can kind of see why some people don't like Americans in some ways, in certain aspects, but also just like this, you know, kind of tearing down that wall of, I think I earned like some respect amongst my Dutch colleagues because I was genuinely interested in learning about their culture and experiencing it and kind of like saying yes to anything. I'd go out to dinner with, you know, 8 Dutch people and like, they all would speak English because there was one non-Dutch speaker there. And you feel bad. Wow. And then you have to go to the bathroom and then you come back and they're back to Dutch. And they're like, oh, sorry, we got to switch back to English. But it was like, man, like, where else are you going to get like an experience like that where a welcoming culture, yet you're learning so much. And I loved the idea of living in a foreign language culture country, just where like, listen, is it cheating because everyone there speaks perfect English? Yes, of course. But living somewhere where it was just a little bit foreign was a great, great thrill. And I don't think I'm done living abroad. I think Hannah and I, at some point in our lives, we'll try to live abroad again. So,
wow. Where would you go?
That's breaking news.
Yeah. Wow. I heard you're the first people. NLU goes global.
I could end up back in Amsterdam. I mean, it's really? Oh, gosh. Have any of you ever been?
I haven't been.
The greatest city. Like, it is honestly as close to utopia as you can get in terms of there's great food, good drinking culture, just good, just like being a part of that.
Everyone's happy.
It's one of the happiest countries in the world. Like,
yeah,
there's no feel like you get off work. First of all, the culture around work is so different. So different. You get 6 weeks vacation and people will legitimately like congratulate you on going on vacation. Like, it's not like a, like, if you're getting ready to be gone for 3 weeks, people get excited for you. Like, oh, please don't.
3 weeks.
Please,
wow.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And people leave.
I want to go away for 3 weeks.
People disappear for
that's the norm.
Longer than that. There was a time I was trying to get a meeting schedule. I remember this. It was like early June, and I needed to schedule like 9 different decently important people throughout the company. And it was like, okay, guys, we got to meet tomorrow, like Friday at 4:30 tomorrow, or like September 17th, because that's like the different times that everyone was off, it was impossible to get that scheduled. And you get off work, you are not checking your email. Like, people just go and pour out into the street and like sit on their stoop and have a glass of wine. And they had this great like boat membership program where you could go rent a boat and like, you don't need a license or anything. You could just navigate the canals in like a boat with some wine and cheese at night for like $90. You could split it like 12 ways and you could captain it yourself. It was awesome. Late sunsets, like in the summer, the sunsets like after 10 p.m. And it was, I'm getting a little nostalgic feeling just talking about it.
Damn it. I am too somehow. And I wasn't even there.
You wanted to talk golf. I was ready to talk Europe.
No, it's
honestly, I'll talk Europe. Definitely. Yeah. It's funny. I was just thinking this week I was talking about moving to a farm at some point, but that was after a lot of red wine.
Have you been watching Yellowstone? Is that why?
Well, yes. And rescue horses on TikTok.
We've been watching Yellowstone and we're scheduling a ranch vacation somehow this summer. We're going to become,
oh my God,
we're going to cowboy it.
Apparently you can rent out, they're opening up the actual Yellowstone ranch and you can stay there.
Whoa.
Like, on site. Ooh. I think that might be a little bit much for
might
me.
Be a little
like,
gimmicky.
I kind of want like, yeah, exactly. I don't want a Disney World experience. Yeah. I want to like get taken to the train station. You know what I mean? Like,
I want the Westworld.
I want to get
experience.
Branded.
I have a question. Staying on the Europe theme, when you were deciding to come back, first of all, where did you go? Because I feel like that's a very hard reentry. And two, you know, it sounds like you had already decided to quit your job. Coming back to do Knowing Up full time, what was that like? And, you know, talk about taking that second leap of faith. You know, it feels like you're leaving such a good situation. What was that like, stepping away from that?
So with me leaving Chicago to go to Amsterdam, you have to sign a contract that says when you are going to come back and you're going to spend at least a year at this job, or you need to pay a fine, whatever you want to call it, basically contractually obliged to come back. And I had every intention to, up until I don't remember the exact date, but starting in like the fall of 2016 is when we had Rory McIlroy on the podcast for the first time, and Knowing Up just changed from that day going forward. I mean, we weren't really able to track download amounts at that time, but I would guess it 5x'd overnight. I mean, all of a sudden people just started noticing like that we were getting some access that a lot of people were not able to get. Rory came back on in February. He actually asked to come back on. It was a super weird time in my life where like Rory was like breaking news through me, and like we were really close back then. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I'll come back on again. And on that podcast, he said, I think I even asked him something like, dude, why are you on the podcast? Why do you want to do this? And he's just like, oh, I think like what you guys are doing is the future of golf media, and anything I can do to be a part of it, I will. And at that moment, I was like, I don't think I'm going to be an auditor anymore. Like, I think this is my job now. And still at that point, I thought I was going to go back and work there for a year. Because, again, like, I was still pretty, like, as much, I guess I hadn't learned enough of my lesson of, like, I was still pretty risk averse of, like, no, like, be safe. Like, keep the job that pays the bills. Because we still had $0 flowing in at this point. And the next month is when we got the first text message, really, that was about potentially sponsoring the podcast, and it was from Callaway. And like, we had like not a single clue as to what to ask for. Like, is our podcast worth $23? Is it worth, you know, $28 million? Like, that's, we truly did not know. Spoiler, it's not $28 million. We had no idea what to do. And when we basically, you know, threw a number out there, they said yes within 30 minutes. And we were like, oh, okay, I think we might have undersold ourselves a little bit. But it was like, all right, around that time, we got an offer to come go to Northwest England. Tron came over actually with this golf breaks company. They were going to pay pay for us to have this big golf trip. And all we had to do was do a couple podcasts about it. Had an amazing time. We just kind of like looked around while we were out there. We were like, could this be a job? Like, could it? Like, how would that work? I don't know exactly, but let's think about this. And it was ultimately had to ask ourselves the question, was like, do we want to do this full time? I think the answer came back. We're like, I think we do. So how is the company going to get, how are we going to get ahead, right? What's the best way to do that? Is it for like me to quit my job now and start now, or like go back to work for a year and then start July 1, 2018? Like, what, you know, on July 1, 2018, what would cause the company to be in a better position? And like, all of a sudden it became crystal clear to me. It was like, I definitely have to quit my job. Like, that almost seems like a no-brainer. Like, of course, if I want to do it full time, any more days I spend on this other job are wasted time, right? I could be kind of getting out on the runway and getting this thing going. So I made the phone call to my dad. Wasn't really sure what he would say. And he was just like, yeah, I was waiting for this phone call. I was wondering when this was going to come. And called my boss back home. He was like, yeah, I kind of heard you've been doing some golf stuff. I don't know what you're doing over there, but yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Good luck with everything. And did it. Gave up everything and then moved in with my parents for 6 months. Moved back to Columbus, Ohio. And, it, you know, was just working from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. I didn't know what I was doing. I'd just wake up and just be like, you know, press a couple buttons here, do a couple things. I had no idea what I was doing.
Isn't that just work in general, though?
Pretty much. But I wasted so much time just, you know, and we've all kind of experienced like a little bit of spinning our wheels when we started doing full time because we didn't know what the job was. We didn't know like how it was really actually going to work. We went trying a bunch of things, whatnot. But, you know, I did it. The goal was like keep pumping the content out and then spend the fall of 2017, you know, organizing some sponsors and partners so that more people, one, so that I could at least pay a few bills, and two, so more people could start rolling in off of their full-time jobs. And so we made a big pitch to Callaway, made a pitch to BMW, and had just a little bit coming in to say like, all right, Tron, you're up. And he, first week of the year in 2018, he quit his job. And DJ found, you know, DJ, we brought in DJ at this point, and we hired him to basically, he was kind of part-time between us and Golfers Journal. And he's riding his bike one day. He sees a for rent sign on First Street in Jacksonville, in Neptune Beach, for this house. He says, I got an idea. You can live in this house. We'll also work out of it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Company can pay some of the rent. You could pay some of the rent. Moved down to Jacksonville. January 1, got in the car, drove down to Jacksonville and moved down there. Tron and DJ were already living down there. And then we started phase two or whatever you want to call it. It was a full-time job now. We would, you know, again, still probably didn't know what we were doing. We'd do some podcast. Hey, we'll do a podcast today. Hey, we'll do one now. And you look at it now, it's set schedule year in advance as to almost how everything's going to play out. And it's funny to look back on, but, you know, I never once regret it. Again, it became pretty clear within a couple months that, like, there was, this thing was so, like, bigger than I think we had even realized. Again, I was on the other side of the world. Like, I didn't get a lot of in-person experience with all this stuff, but you go out to tour events and people, pros knew who we were and, like, would make jokes and we're obviously following it. It was like, oh my God, dude, I truly didn't realize what we were sitting on. And, you know, transition that into being a full-time job now at age, I was 31, I guess, at that time. And here we are for the fastest possible years you could ever imagine. And we're sitting here talking to you. It's surreal. It's surreal. And I say this, like, I don't know how to say it other than, like, it's super weird to have every day be like a high, right? Like every day is great. It really is. Like, it's a lot of hard work. Don't get me wrong. But, like, you don't have, like, great, great days because they're all really good. And, like, that's a great way to go through life, of course. But it was super weird, you know, to wake, like, now I truly can't picture going, like, getting up and going, like, into a 9-to-5 job because I've lost, like, that control that I had is been released. Like, I love the autonomy of the job. Now, the ironic part of it is I work way more now than I ever did in the past. Like, it's so much harder to turn off than I thought. I kind of thought, I'm quitting my job. You know, I can go read a book in a coffee shop from 3 to 5 in the afternoon and no one can say anything. And, like, it turns out it doesn't really work that way. That was a misconception I had about working for yourself. But it's a very, very fun and interesting way to go through life, kind of just following a passion and doing something that it feels, the word I always use is purpose. Like, I wake up in the morning, I pour a cup of coffee and, like, I go to the computer, not because I feel like I have things I have to do. It's like, I have a purpose. Like, I should get this done. I want to get this done. I want to do this. I want to do this, 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 and this. And I'm just super blessed. We're all super blessed to have a job and a gig that facilitates that. And it's not lost on me. It's appreciated every single day. And we still are having a blast doing it.
I feel like we're all sitting here with lots of ideas going on in our.
I was just like, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I don't think
lots of daydreams.
I gotta stay up all night. I got a lot to do.
making me think a lot about our life choices over here.
Well, like, my life choice, I'm gonna be up till 1 a.m. studying drone stuff and taking an exam as well tomorrow probably. So it's sometimes not as sexy. I will say that. Like, this job sometimes is not quite as sexy as people think.
Drone exam, like, sounds pretty sexy.
Are our current jobs sexy, though? Is any job actually? I think that's, like, the funny thing about you deciding when you were 27, because it's like, once you've worked for a while, like, I feel like when you get to 27, you're like, I have to keep doing this every fucking day for the rest of my life. Like, you're kidding me. Like, this is a sick, twisted joke. Like, I just have to keep doing this. Like, every day, but all the
on
time.
On the flip side, so I remember someone along the way describing being a writer as having unfinished homework for life. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds horrible. Like, I would never want that. And then kind of forgot about that, you know, worked my normal job, quit my job, and decided to make content for a living. And I was like, oh my God, I've got unfinished homework for life. It's for life. Like, you're always.
But you're assigning the homework.
You are, but, like, you know, it's still homework. Like, you gotta, I don't know when I'm gonna stop making, like, there will be a day when I stop making golf content, right? I have no idea when that day is. It might be 35 years from now, for all I know. That's kind of intimidating, of, like, you can't let up now that it's flowing. When you got a content business, like, you don't take months off. Like, you don't just say, we're not publishing anything for a month. Like, that's not how it works. You know, ESPN.com doesn't work that way. And, like, you know, sometimes we have to, like, view ourselves through some of those lenses of, like, what do serious companies do? Like, yeah, we can have fun. We can joke around. We can don't have to always be serious. But, like, think about how, you know, every day that you're not, you know, doing some of these things, you might be losing ground to somebody else. So
Yeah. Wow. Losing ground to somebody else. I could say a lot on that, but I actually really, I'm curious to know how you got Rory for the first time, because one of the things we wanted to ask you about was a little bit about like your interview style and how you like you, it's unbelievable to think that you were an accountant. You know what I mean? Like you just have a really great style. Like you talk to all these very, very, very famous people and, you know, sound extremely professional and everything. So to go back to the first question, how did that happen? The Rory interview that changed your life?
I went to the 2016 Ryder Cup. It was like the first event I really attended since No Laying Up had gotten decently popular. And I still, the weirdest and most unexplained thing about all of this is like how closely Rory followed our stuff prior to us ever meeting. And I got there and at this point we weren't making videos. Like I did not post pictures of myself. We didn't post videos of us playing golf or anything like that. I got there and like Rory recognized me immediately. And like during the Ryder Cup just started like talking to me. And like now in 2021, like that happening would not like rock my world. I'm an accountant on the other side of the world going to, you know, Hazeltine in Minnesota. And like one of the guys that I remember like watching when he was, you know, when I was just like a golf fan attending events, it's like talking to me during the Ryder Cup, the biggest event of all of them. It was blowing my freaking mind. And throughout the course of the week, he would basically kind of shit talk me in between holes and just joke around. And like, I just had no idea that a professional athlete could be that kind of aware of his surroundings and have that much fun with it. And so I was like testing my luck afterwards. He followed us on Twitter. So I sent him a DM and I was like, you know, hey, great to meet you in person, something like that, blah, blah, super lame. Probably I would cringe to look back at it. But, you know, we do a podcast. Would you ever want to come on? And I didn't hear a word for like 3 weeks. And I was like, oh, God, I blew it. Like, I was way too forward. Like, probably thinks you're so lame, dude. And he finally responded like 3 weeks later. He's like, hey, I never checked this. Here's my phone number. I'd love to do it. Let's do it tomorrow.
Phone number?
And I was like, what the hell? So, yeah. It's funny you said like my interview style. Like at that time, if you go back to and listen to episode 56 with Rory, it is
I'm going
so cringy. No. So I was literally recording it like from the speakerphone of my phone into my iPad. Like that was the recording audio with Rory. Like we had no investment in the podcast at this point. I didn't know how to do a microphone. I didn't know how to. There wasn't all this fancy squad cast stuff that you kids have at all easy these days. It was not that easy back in my day. I didn't know it was an interview. So it's funny, if you go back and listen to it, like, I just, like, say things to him. I'm like, oh, yeah, Paul Casey, blah, blah, blah. I didn't ask him questions. I didn't know I was supposed to interview them. Because I always viewed the podcast as a conversation. And then, like, somebody said something to me along the lines of, like, interviewing. And I was like, oh, I probably should view it like an interview and asking questions. Which, again, sounds ridiculous now, but it is, like, a very learned and evolved skill to say, like, to know what your mission is and what you want to get out of somebody, yet try to disarm them in a way to the point where they get comfortable with it. If you're going to ask an uncomfortable question, ask it in a fair way, you know, so that they have a chance to answer fairly. So stuff maybe doesn't get taken out of context. Don't be too upfront and accusatory. If I know a subject is going to be tough before we start recording, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to ask about this. What's the best way I can put you in a position to succeed? I don't want to play gotcha. You know, we don't like, there's no point. Our style is not like, you know, we do, you know, rely on access to some of these guys. Right. So balancing that act of, you know, when I need to be critical of you, I'm still need to do it. And sometimes I wonder, you know, when I say things critical about guys that I'm decent friends with, like, does that mean the end of the relationship? I don't know. Hopefully they're not so sensitive that they can't understand where I'm coming from. Rory's actually been really great with that. I've told him, I'm like, dude, like, you know, I don't know how to handle some of this stuff. Like, you and I are pretty close yet. You know, there's times I need to be critical. He's like, dude, I listened to it all and it's all been fair. Like, and a lot of your criticism, like sometimes your criticisms are really on point. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Phew. Sweated that one out. Good to know. Now I'm going to triple down and rip on you. But so it comes from a place of like, all right, a through line is if somebody met this person, like what would they want to ask him? What would you want to know? Like, what's a good story? Yet at the same time, like, there's certain things that guys aren't going to talk about that, you know, you can't ask about or just are not really very fair questions and things like that. But it helps too to like, I try to at least give off an impression to guys that they're talking to someone that understands what they're going through. I can't ever have been the guy that has been there. I never will be the guy that has been there or played the highest level of professional golf. But like, I understand a little bit about tournament golf. I understand about shot shaping. I understand about feels. I understand about nerves. I, gather like the math of how all these championships work. And like, I think it's kind of lazy when guys are like, why don't you win? Why don't you win? Why don't you win? When it's like, I'll speak to them in terms of like, I understand why you're not winning. Like, it's really difficult to win. And I think that helps when guys are not, I ask pretty specific questions and I try to give, sometimes I'll just give them something to react to. One, just give them a break from talking. When you're a guest on a podcast, like, I'm rambling as I say this, like, you talk a lot, right? And you need like a break sometimes of, you know, something to react to. It might, sometimes it's easier if I just say something that's like, am I onto something there? That gives them something to like, okay, well, all right, he understands at least this. Now I can explain it at this level rather than like, hey, how do you feel going into this week? Oh, I feel pretty good. Yeah, the game's coming around. Like, that's how you get boring ass answers. So people say that I lead people on too much. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of intentional sometimes. Like, sometimes I don't want to leave things too open-ended for somebody to give a boring answer. Like, I probably know what I'm trying to get at of like, no, I know this story about you. Like, take me there. I want to know that one. So that's how I describe my style. It's still ever evolving. It never will be perfect. I still, before the start of every podcast, I'm like, I get nervous. I get anxious. I get a little sweaty. Like, I'm still not comfortable doing it. It's an uncomfortable feeling. It's not the fame of any of the people I talk to. It's just the idea of like creating good content. I still get anxious about, but I think it's a good thing.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. All of that. Sorry. It's a lot to take in.
No, it's super interesting.
No, when I was thinking at a certain point, I was like, should I start writing this down? And I was like, no, we're recording it. Like, you can just listen to it later and write it then or something.
We have this.
We're just taking notes. Wow. That's just all so interesting. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words.
See, that happens. I do that too. Yet I edit that part out. No one ever knows the difference, right? I'd be like, hold on, man. I need a second. Like, I need five.
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
5 seconds to figure out where I'm going to go next. And they're like, yeah, okay, that's fine. That's fine.
No, but that's all really so cool. Wow. Yeah, again, at a loss. We had so many more questions for you, too, but I feel like we should be respectful of your time since you've got your drone exam to study for.
Yeah, which
I'm sure you're prepared for anyway. I think you'll do great.
I passed all my practice exams. I got some time. Don't feel bad. You don't need to kick me out just yet. If you got more...
You don't seem like you half-ass anything. So I'm sure you've done all the reading and all the
studying.
Well,
this was a tight time frame. I found out about this Friday, and it takes like 20 hours to study for. So it's been a tight little squeeze. I got my note cards here though, and I think we're gonna be okay. Yeah.
Can you read one of them to us?
I mean, so it's kind of tough. Like,
just very curious.
What does a military route with four numbers entail? Like, a military training route with four numbers, what does that mean? I can tell you this without flipping it over. It means that they're flying at 1,500 feet or lower, or no segment above 1,500 feet average ground level.
Do you want to keep doing some of these?
Class G, yeah. Class G.
Two birds, one stone.
Class G airspace. G means good to go. That means uncontrolled airspace. You can go ham as long as you're not flying above 400 feet. Above ground level. Class D airspace is everything up to 3,200 feet, 2,500 feet, dotted blue lines on maps. It's tough. I'm finally getting certified.
That's very specific.
I mean, the first question, I was like, I don't even know what format
the question is.
I don't know what the question was or the answer.
You can't show up and take it. That's the only thing about this is like, you gotta spend a little time on it. So,
yeah. Okay. I want to just say one thing is that we have a lot of questions. We might have to have you come on another time. And I'm not expecting you to answer this now, but just so you know that this is high burning on the top of my mind. I need someone to explain the concept of strokes gained.
Oh, this will take 2 seconds.
And I have listened. Okay,
maybe
then
not.
Do it.
Maybe not if you've listened to other pods. So I say this about crypto too. Like it makes sense in my head, and I don't know if I'm good at teaching it, right? Like, it makes sense enough that I trust it, but I don't think I'm great at explaining it. But imagine this. Let's say you are a PGA Tour player, LPGA Tour player. You have an 8-foot putt. That means an 8-foot putt for, you know, male and female tour pros is a 50% chance of making it, right? So if you make it, you have gained a half shot, right? Your expected strokes to hole out from that point is 1.5. That would be your average expected to hole out. If you miss the putt and 2-putt, you've lost a half stroke because it took you 2 strokes when it should average 1.5, right? So if you are, let's call it, I don't know what the exact number is, let's call it 150 yards away in the middle of the fairway, the average strokes to hole out there might be 3. So if you hit a shot to within 2 feet of the hole, you probably gained close to a full shot there because you are virtually guaranteed to finish the hole in 2 strokes from there instead of 3. So maybe you gained 0.9 shots with that and you gained 0.1 with the putt you made or something like that. If you hit that shot to 25 feet, that may be a dead even 0 strokes gained in that. If you hit it into a bunker, you may have lost half a shot with it. And if you don't recover that half shot at some point, either through a good approach shot or through a long putt that you made, you probably are going to make a bogey and lose a shot to the field in that regard. So does that help?
Yes, it really does. It really does.
I have a lot more questions now, but it does lay the groundwork nicely.
Well, so I used to, what helped
we'll have to do a whole episode.
What helped me was like understanding that if I, when I used to be, when I miss an 8-foot putt, I would get super down on my putting. Miss an 8-foot par putt, I suck at putting. If I could only putt, I could be such a better player. Just like understanding now that like a tour pro makes that half the time, but you know what the tour pro doesn't do very often is leave himself an 8-foot par putt. You know how they avoid that? By hitting in regulation pretty darn close to the hole. So the name of the game in strokes gain, in regulation, hit it as close to the hole as possible. I know that's insanely simple. It's crazy simple. I know it is. But if you want to get better at golf, getting closer to the hole in regulation is the fastest way. It's not getting better at chipping. It's not getting better at putting. You may have a huge gap in, you know, you could be a horrible putter, truly, and you'd be losing some strokes. But if you want to get better, like the only way I could get better, it would be, let's say I hit 10 greens around, and I'll use greens in regulation is not necessarily a great stat, but if I go from 10 to 13, that's going to be way better than me getting better at putting. It just is. Like you can have a bad putting day hitting 14 greens and have a better day than you would have had good putting day hitting 10. It just, you are putting constant stress on your game that's unsustainable. It's sustainable as heck if you can hit a lot of fairways and greens, and that really is the name of the game. And so now it's like, all right, if I had that 8-foot par putt, I look backwards to say, where did I go wrong? Where did I lose a shot? And it's like, you know what, dude, you drove in the fairway bunker and you got it, hit a good recovery shot out of there, but like you were 65 feet away from the hole. You know, like you did as good as you could with your approach, but like the tee shot is where you cost yourself and you didn't hit a great lag putt. You didn't make up the shot. So now you have the 8-footer. Don't be mad about missing the 8-footer. Don't give yourself the 8-footer. So that's kind of the lesson I feel like I've learned in strokes gain.
Wow. Great explanation.
Yeah, that's really
very
helpful.
And this,
and very
the
succinct.
Only time it's ever made
this
sense.
This is where,
yeah, and succinct. Well, you have to go.
No,
so.
this is where it like. This is the dumbest, the most simple, you know, take I could have. But it really kind of clicked for me watching Zach Blair play golf, who doesn't hit it very far. I hit it way longer than he does. No big deal. yet at all times with him, again, this is so crazy simple. The ball is moving towards the hole. At all times. He's hitting 3 irons into greens that I might be hitting a 7 iron into, but like mine might be starting out right and drawing and my ball's moving away from the hole, or his just always going straight towards the hole, always straight towards the hole. And on like a chip, like I feel like I can invent things of like, if I swing it out in here, then maybe it'll get there. Where it's like, no, I'm just going to hit it like right at the hole. And that made so much more sense to me. Like, you know, even on 12-foot putts, like it's going to get within this of the hole. And that's a good visualization for me in terms of like, you can start thinking of all of these things, my swing, my rotation, am I fading it? Am I getting it up over this? Am I doing this? Blah, blah, blah. Am I bringing it in left to right, right to left? Just hit it towards the damn hole. Like that's all you got to do. Like target, focus, hit it towards the damn hole. And that's a super helpful thought.
I like that concept. That's easy to
wrap
my head around.
It sounds even worse now that I said it out loud, but it makes so much more sense in my head. Just hit it towards the damn hole.
I feel like we're walking away with two really nice taglines from you. One, hit it as close to the hole as you can. And two, you can do whatever you want in life.
Yeah.
Attribute that quote to me.
Great
and
mantras.
Not my dad, please.
And, I was going to say, we can give your dad a shout out. I want your dad to listen to this.
I want
to be very proud.
I want to make sure
your dad's email. We're going
to
ask you for your dad's email when we stop recording. I'll send it to him personally. Mr. Solomon, your son did an excellent job. Actually, do your parents listen to like the podcast?
Yes, because I'll get some messages from my mom of, oh, used a lot of foul language this week. And yeah, I get that one a lot.
Yeah, is that happening?
I am sorry.
That's
I am
nice,
sorry,
though.
But listen, Mom, when we designed this podcast, I did not have you in mind. I cannot tell you how far down the list
it wasn't for
of things
you.
I was thinking through on the list, but it was funny. Actually, what's funny now, look back on, in the very beginning when we started it, I was super embarrassed to tell people that we had a golf blog. Like, I didn't tell any of my friends. I thought it was a weird thing that we did, and it is still kind of a weird thing, but I was like actually legitimately like, embarrassed to have a golf blog.
Well, hey, and who's getting the last laugh now?
Honestly, probably still them. I'm still a little embarrassed by it.
Not if you have Roy McIlroy and speed dial.
Yeah, seriously. Pretty legit. At least it paid off, you know? It would have been embarrassing if, you know, you were still an accountant just with a golf blog on the side, right?
I guess you could say that. That's fair to say.
That would be embarrassing. Doing for this long, it's like one of those things, like when people are like have like influencer-esque accounts like without that many followers or likes, like who are you doing this for? You know, like,
well,
this
listen,
just for you.
I will say we did it for a long time without anybody following it. And that's the thing that like, you know, I struggle at times to give people advice on it, because I'm like, hey, just be like us. Just like work tirelessly at it for like 4 years. Have nothing come in the door for like 4 years. No guarantees it's going to work. Like, you know, just kind of keep throwing stuff out into the ether and hope you catch like this amazing, perfect cyclone butterfly effect that we've been able to catch. And like, just hope for that. And if not, like 4 years of work goes out the window anyways. Like, go do that. It's like, all right, well, that doesn't sound like very good advice. Like, there's a lot of luck. You know, luck is where skill and opportunity meet. And I really do believe that. Like, we created a lot of the opportunity, but like there's a lot of great timing, a lot of things that, you know, went in our way to help make it successful. And keeping that in mind in terms of like, you're not infallible in any of this. Like, you're not, you know, somebody, the second you start, it's a competitive industry out there, right? Just cause you were first in a lot of, we got a great head start just cause you were first doesn't mean you're better than anybody that's upcoming. Like, we're not experts. Like, I'm not saying I'm better than the next guy at covering golf or any of that, but I know that we can cover golf in the way that we cover it. And if that's good enough for people, then we're going to try to make those people happy through the content. So,
well, I mean, I think they seem really happy. You have ravenous fans, and extremely insightful. So you're not losing your fastball anytime soon, it seems. pretty good. This is good stuff.
I'll be using the fastball tomorrow on the drone exam, limiting it to 100 miles an hour, though, because that's the fastest you can fly a drone, which is 87 knots.
Working in the quizzes.
Seem very well prepared.
We're going to put your test score in the show notes so everyone knows.
Oh, no.
Before listening, what you got.
Put my practice test score. It was 83% on the practice test.
Oh, that's great.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Thank you.
Oh, man. Well, hey, Solly, best of luck on that test. Yeah. I have no doubts in your abilities. So,
you know,
I think that you'll be a licensed operator, licensed pilot. I don't know what you call a drone pilot.
I think an airman, I believe. I want to go by that. Let's go by that.
I did learn something new every day.
Wow.
It's definitely really not that.
I was like, I'm glad I asked. I really thought it was a pilot or something.
This is my aircraft right here. This is the size of it. I am not an airman, so.
That's pretty legit.
It's so cute.
My brother-in-law who was in the Air Force or in the Navy, was a pilot in the Navy. I'm sure he'll appreciate me saying, hey, we're on the same level now.
He's going to love it.
So much in common. But we really can't thank you enough for coming on and taking the time. And now you have to come back on because we still have questions.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, all the best. And until we – everybody else, thank you for listening too. I forgot you guys were there. I really did. But thank you for listening. I hope that you liked it. Again, as always, reach out anytime. We love hearing from you. And until next time, hang loose, swing easy, and we will see you.
A couple of songs from a new LP we have to do for you now. This first one's called Traveling Man. Up with the sun, gone with the wind. She always said I was lazy. Leaving my home, leaving my friends, running when things get too crazy. Out to the road, out beneath the stars, feeling the breeze, passing the cars. Women have come, women have gone, everyone trying to cage me. Yeah. Some were so sweet,
they got free. Others, they only enraged me. Sometimes at night, I see their faces. I feel the traces they've left on my soul. And those are the memories that make me a wealthy soul. I tell you, those are the memories that make me a wealthy soul. Traveling man, love when I can. Turn loose my hand, cause I'm going, man. Yeah. I'm traveling man, love when I can. But sooner than later, I'm going. I'm traveling man. Tell you those are the memories.